on the upper thigh. Several surfers in the area came to her rescue and used a rubber surfboard leash as a tourniquet to stop the bleeding. Witnesses say the woman's leg muscle was just hanging off. Officials believe that she was attacked by a great white or a seven-gill shark, which have recently been seen in the area. The beach is expected to reopen later today. Jason Campidonia, San Diego.
People in the Midwest and South cleaning up after severe weekend storms, heavy damage, flooding, and tornadoes in some cases. At least 14 people are dead, including a 2-year-old Tennessee girl struck by a heavy goalpost blown over by high winds. USA Radio News.
Weather today, areas of fog before 1 p.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy with a high near 78. East wind 6 to 13 miles per hour, becoming south in the afternoon. Showers tonight and thunderstorms. Some of the storms could produce gusty winds, low around 61. South wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half an inch possible. Tuesday, a chance of showers mainly before 7 a.m. Mostly sunny with a high near 70. West wind 11 to 17 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Having a little tongue twister with precipitation here. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 46. West wind 6 to 13 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 63. West wind 8 to 15 miles per hour.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We don't have a paid staff. We don't have an office. We work out of our houses, and we try to help people who have problems with either somebody, a family member, or someone themselves who have a mental health issue. And we do this in various ways. We do it by teaching classes. We have what they call a family-to-family class, which family members can come. And it's a 12-week course. And you don't have to be a blood relative. It can be your next-door neighbor or somebody you work with or somebody you care about. And we try to teach people what it's like to have a mental illness. And we try to make them understand a little bit more about what their loved one or their friend or neighbor is going through. And we go over medications, side effects, and we also do what to not to say and what to say in certain circumstances, what to do and what not to do. And we also... That was our guest making an approach here, a big entrance, but... But anyway, we also run support groups, which is the third Thursday of every month in Hunterdon County in Flemington. And we also have what they call a basics course, which is for families who have youth 18 and under who have mental health issues. And that's a 6-week course. If you need some more information or you'd like some questions or you have some questions or whatever, you can give us a call at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24 hours a day. But we do have someone that checks it at least twice a day, and we promise we will get back to you as soon as possible, definitely within 24 hours. We're very privileged today to have with us Carol Ricard. And Carol and I go way back. It's great to see you again, Carol.
You too. Sorry I'm making such a noise over here.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you drop the headsets.
Yeah.
With the mics on. But Carol, we'll see each other more now that she's also on the mental health board with me. So, except
right.
She's not going to be there this Thursday.
No, not this Thursday, but back on the schedule again, though.
Yeah, exactly. Carol is a licensed clinical social worker, and what was it, TTS, tobacco
treatment specialist.
Okay. I keep wanting to say something else.
Yeah.
But we're on the radio. And is also known as America's Wellness Ambassador. And she is a dynamic and engaging speaker who brings life practical and useful solutions. She's a weekly contributor for Esperanza Magazine, which is depression and
anxiety,
right? Okay, I get the magazine. I don't
yeah.
know that. But and she's also written 12 books on stress and wellness and is also the creator and the host of a 30-minute wellness show on Princeton TV, The Well You Show. There you go. So if you want to visit Well University at .com or thewellyoushow.com for more wellness and recovery resources, you can also reach Carol at 888-LIFE-TOOLS, which is 543-3866.
That's right. You've got to give them the numbers so you don't have to, look at the phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Carol, one of the things that you speak about is the stress of a caregiver.
Yes.
Now, I know there's different types of stress that people who are caregivers, for their various persons that they're dealing with and so on and so forth. Would you elaborate on some of it?
Well, when you say the word stress, when I use the word, what it means is it's a response to a change or a situation. And so if you think about it, being a caregiver, it is a change and it can be a situation. And if you put the two together, and I very carefully, with my book, said to manage or reduce stress, because when you're a caregiver, you're going to deal with a lot of change in a lot of situations. So the potential for stress is always there. And if we can reduce some of it, we do. If we can't, we got to manage what's there. So it's like I have a soda bottle here with me, and if I took that soda bottle up and I shook it up. In fact, here, let me do this.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to do it while we're
here. I trust you, Carol.
All right. There's lots of expensive equipment around here. But if you think about the pressure that builds up inside the bottle, that's kind of what life does to us. And when you're a caregiver, that it does that constantly, all day sometimes, every day. And so what, to me, managing and reducing is about taking little and creating little releases of that pressure so it doesn't make a mess. And that's kind of how I like to get people to see stress.
But by the same token, depending on their loved one or relative or whoever it is that they're caring for, that stress could be 24/7, 7 days a week because
absolutely.
Of what they're
yeah.
what they're dealing with
yeah.
with their loved one.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
If it's just someone that can't walk or whatever, I'm just not that that's good, but I'm just saying, rather than someone who is paranoid schizophrenic and thinking that the walls are locked, they're watching them behind the walls and all that sort of thing, it can be a lot more stressful.
Yeah, absolutely. That's 24 hours, which makes it even more important to kind of find releases. You reminded me, I was at the hospital this morning helping out the social workers, and I had a lady who came into the hospital over the weekend because her son had gotten out of the state hospital, sent him to a group home, and he ran away and came to her house. And so she'd been up for 3 days, just trying to take care of him. And I think that's the other thing, is that when you're so busy taking care of somebody else, the person that you forget to even take care of is yourself. And that's really critical. And that's why I kind of even say, if it's just 60 seconds, to create like a little out of the bottle, because here's what happens. If that pressure, if you think about a soda bottle or seltzer bottle, two things are going to happen. Eventually, it could explode, or what happens is people go the other direction and they implode, meaning that they're the ones that end up getting hurt or end up getting sick, and creating and finding little releases, you know. And that's where respite, sometimes, Larry, that's the most important part for respite, is to give that person a break for even an hour, you know, so that they can kind of get away from the 24 hours and maybe have 23 and then 1 hour for themselves. Right. And this woman really said, you know, that she was up these 3 days worrying about her son, keeping an eye on him.
Right.
You know, which she eventually was able to get somebody else in the family to help her out, you know, because she really couldn't do it any longer.
Right. When I teach the family-to-family class, I tell people in the class, make sure that you take care of yourself, because then if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to take care of your loved one.
Yeah.
So consequently, even if it's 15 minutes on a back porch looking at the sky, or, you know, smelling the roses, it's something, you know.
Yeah.
Or if you can take the dog around a block or whatever, depending on where you live.
Yeah.
In my area, my wife walks around a block and it's 3 miles.
I was going to say, you don't have blocks where you live. You know, I don't have blocks where I live either.
You know, read a book. Read a couple pages in a book or whatever. Watch a show that you like to watch on television or something like that.
That, you know, so having worked in women's trauma programs over the years too, we always used to use the oxygen on yourself first if you're flying in that airplane, you know, and if drops and you're traveling with a child or an adult who needs help, you're supposed to still put it on yourself
first. Right.
And believe it or not, I actually had a woman in one of my group therapies years ago say, oh no, I couldn't do that. She said, I put it on my kids first. And I said, well, then you'd be dead, you know, and how is that going to help your kids? I said, I'm curious, why wouldn't you do it? And her response was, that would be selfish. And that's when I made up a word. I actually was like, all right, quick, Carol, you got to think, because it's not being selfish. So I called it Selfness. And that was my next to last book called Selfness. Because selfness is, we have to take care of ourselves in order to be able to take care of other people. And it's not being selfish when you do that.
Right.
You know, it's not being selfish taking 15 minutes to be outside on the porch.
Right, exactly.
It's really being selfness, which I think of as, for two words, self-preservation, you know, because if you don't practice it, you aren't going to be around.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
yeah. Exactly. Tracy, did you have anything you want to say?
You were talking about who gives the caregiver respite if... Is there an organization that relieves and comes in?
There are. I mean, I know that I had an uncle who, you know, back in the old days, we called him mentally retarded, and he kind of lived in a home, and it was a group home, but there was actually the ARC of Cumberland County had a respite program where they kind of bring in family members so they can have a couple hours to go out. There are two respite homes for mental health in New Jersey that CSP, Collaborative Support Programs, runs. And the goal of it then is, again, that respite is just, gosh, give that person a little bit of a break. I would actually Google respite services, and, you know, in New Jersey, or kind of if it was particularly for older adults or for mental health, just to see. I love Google. I never used to be able to do it very well, but I've gotten better. Because it opens up our world to so many different options that we never knew were there before.
And caregivers can just feel very, very alone.
Yeah.
So are there many support groups for caregivers?
Well, again, I mean, when you're a caregiver, getting to a support group is always challenging. Last week, I think it was, the 20th of April, so it was probably 2 weeks ago, maybe, I did a caregiver's, workshop on caregiver stress at Capitol Health. And I was amazed how many people we had that came. But also, some of those people said, you know, getting there, it was like, we're not going to be here till 8 o'clock, are we? And it's like, no, you know, so use that time to go do something else. But that was a rarity, I mean, to be able to get away. I think another way caregivers can get support is, again, using their computer or even a telephone. You know, I think that's the other most important part. And again, there are so many wonderful online support systems now that you don't even have to leave your home to be part of a support group. Which sometimes creates more stress trying to get away to it, quite honestly. And the goal, that's not really the goal.
No. But that's true. And, you know, there is online or, you know, what they call it, Skype, you know, where you have support groups that way. But in order to do that, you have to have that 15, 20 minutes, half hour where, you know, your loved one is not acting out
well,
or whatever.
You brought up a good point, though. You know what, Larry? Even on computers, that's the whole idea of these forums, is that you can go in, type in a question, or just connect to people. Even if you got 3 minutes, you know, I can log on to my computer. Right. Now, you have to have a computer in order to be able to do that. But you're right. It's just, you know, but I think it really is finding a way to put I think the way I like to explain it, and even with patients and their mental health, I used to say, we all need to be around people that are speaking the same language that we are. And when you're a caregiver, there's a special language that goes along with that. And having your peeps, or somebody else said to me, you got to have your peeps, your peoples. And that's really the role that, you know, that NAMI has played so wonderfully for family members.
Right. And, you know, I know that you're pretty much involved with the Mental Health Parity Law.
Yeah.
Would you like to speak to that and the ups and downs of the law?
Well, it's interesting because if I could get anybody, I went to a conference on Saturday. It was the New Jersey Council of Churches, and it was about the opioid crisis and how the church is in. Great workshop. But in my little spot I was in, I asked people, all right, anybody here know what parity means? And there must have been 13 people in my session. Nobody knew. So the idea of parity goes back to when those of us, because I'm also a person living with a mental health condition for 25 years. I call myself a PLW, person living well. you know, that we used to be discriminated against. I mean, I remember back in the day when you look at our healthcare pre-existing condition, I once was the victim of that because when I worked for my employer, I was treated for major depression. I was diagnosed. I was seeing a psychiatrist. And then when I left that job and I went to another job, guess what? My mental health became a pre-existing condition. And so they wouldn't cover, you know, seeing my psychiatrist. So then what ended up happening was I got my general practitioner to keep prescribing my medication. So I kind of had to work around that. That worked for me. So the parity law was actually came into being back in 2008, and it basically says is that insurance plans have to treat our physical and our mental health equally. You know, so if I get 12 visits to see my family doctor, that I should get 12 visits to see my psychiatrist. You know, and
do
in the past.
I'm not saying you particularly, but do people get that?
Well, here's the problem. Nobody even knows about the law, which is why I love doing the presentation. So if anybody's listening, I'll come talk and help you learn. Because if you don't know what you don't know, then you don't know what you're not getting.
Okay.
There's a lot of people
that
don't know. There's a lot of people that just don't know. And then I'll be honest with you, the Affordable Care Act really strengthened it, because what used to happen is it said if a plan offered mental health benefits, they had to be the same as their physical health, right? Well, guess what plans did? They didn't offer the mental health, so then it was a non-issue. The Affordable Care Act came along and said you must, you know, for a good portion of plans, you must offer behavioral health benefits. And so that made it be one of those 10 essential benefits. So basically saying, well, yes, you have to treat the whole body.
Right.
Imagine that. I'm a whole person.
But aren't there some downs to that law, though, too, to the mental health parity law?
I don't know of any downs, quite honestly.
Okay.
Yeah. The down is that it's a federal law, but it's up to the states to enforce. And so there is no enforcement. And there are only two states right now that are doing that. There's some legislation even here in New Jersey coming up. We actually have a bill that would say the Department of Banking and Insurance has to kind of just do a report and produce the report, because it's kind of like the fox has been guarding the hen house.
Insurance companies.
You know, and the two states that have done investigations to kind of really look at that, New York and California, and 24 out of 24 plans in California did not really meet the threshold for parity, and not intentionally. I mean, not intentionally trying to kind of like screw people out of money, but they themselves may not understand it enough. So they've been working together to do that.
Well, how do you, in your opinion, how do you figure you're going to get people to understand what the mental health parity law is?
Well,
and how do you get that information out to people?
Well, I'll tell you what, I do for DBSA, which stands for Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. That's one of the things I do for them, is these workshops and trying to really kind of get out and to educate people. And what's really amazing is we looked at our statistics of our workshop, and we can increase understanding 100%, you know, because we kind of measure a before and an after. And we're looking at ways, how could we get that online and get that actually out to more people? Because it comes down to a time thing, too.
You could be streaming your presentations.
Yeah. We actually just applied for a grant, and eventually, if it was accepted, it would live online at kind of a department of the National Institutes of Health, so that it could kind of be there. But again, it's really the education piece, because if you don't know it exists, you can't enforce it. Right. Makes a big difference when I'm talking to an insurance company, you know, and I say, hey, wait.
I'd like to ask a question about that, the DBSA events. I know there's a DBSA group that meets every week in Somerset, but I have never heard of, is this a statewide, these events where you talk? Where are they, and when are they?
Well, I'll tell you what, DBSA is kind of like NAMI, you know, in that it's national presence. Yeah. They have a huge online, lots of tools. But here in New Jersey, there is DBSA New Jersey, which has a listing of all the different chapters and support groups. I think we're up to 24 now in the state. And
well, you have one in Flemington, too.
I was going to say, there's one right here. Yeah, one right here at the Getting Together Center.
I didn't know if that was still active. I thought it had disbanded.
It went inactive, and now it's back active again. Every Friday.
Every Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, 1 o'clock or something?
Yes, I believe it's at 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock on Fridays at the Getting Together Center.
You know. That's 52 East Main Street.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. I didn't know the address. So, but it's kind of like I see them as parallels, you know, where really kind of educating the family members and the persons living with it. Also, it's funny because DBSA was started 35 years ago by a woman in New York, in Chicago, Illinois, whose psychiatrist told her, put a classified ad in the newspaper and invite anyone taking lithium to your home. That's the true story. I got to hear it 2 years ago. And she said, the first week, one person came. She said, but eventually his word, I mean, they didn't even say mental health, just if you were taking lithium, which kind of was the indicator of what your diagnosis was, you know, bipolar disorder, or back then manic depression. And she said it just kind of snowballed from there. But yeah, and again, it goes back to being around people that speak the voice that you speak to, that language. You know, but yeah, I love teaching people about the parity law, because again, you don't know what you don't know, and when you're being denied treatment, and treatment is what you need in order to get well, makes it hard sometimes.
So anybody who feels that they are being discriminated against that way, all they have to do then is tell their insurance company, you have to cover me? I mean, how easy is it to get it enforced?
There's a procedure. Okay. I mean, there's definitely a procedure, but if you don't know what you don't know, then you don't even know that, you know, you figure, oh, well, they can do this to me. Mm-hmm. I think, and notoriously, you know, whether it be for physical or mental health, I think how everybody could say, well, you know, kind of, it's natural. But you either kind of like give up or you just stick with it. And that's where anybody listening, if they want to call me, you know, at this 888 Life Tools number, which is 543-3866, I'm happy to help anybody. And I've gotten phone calls over the last year and not really been parity issues, but that's okay because I'd rather help somebody try and get help. So.
You mentioned the law that. I can't think of the name of it now, it just went out of my head, in conjunction with the parity law.
The Affordable Care Act?
Affordable Care Act,
yeah.
Okay. Now, that I know has ups and downs.
Oh, sure.
That has good parts and bad parts.
It does have good parts and bad parts.
Right.
And is subject to be nullified or changed at any moment, really.
The thing about the Affordable Care Act, I mean, I have seen it serve people, you know, who otherwise would have no access to care. You know, if you got laid off and you had unemployment, so you're getting a whopping $700 or even $800 a month, you wouldn't qualify for any health insurance in the past. So if you had a mental health issue, kind of you were screwed because you didn't have any insurance to pay for your medicine. You had no insurance to pay for your treatment. Nowadays, here in New Jersey, we expanded the Medicaid so that if you do have a little bit of income, you know, there's a threshold. But I've actually seen it help people now go on to continue living and be productive in society because they had access to health care. There's parts that need to be fixed. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's not perfect, but the simple fact that it has given people an opportunity to take care of their health and well-being, to me, is just amazing. When I was driving over here, I had to shut it off, the radio, because they were talking about it, you know, and I'm in my car, and so guess what? I can't do anything about it, so I didn't need to stress myself out anymore, all right? But I do know there was this amendment and the disagreement that, you know, our president said yesterday that pre-existing conditions are a part of whatever it is they have on the table right now, but that's not true. You know, the MacArthur Amendment, if it was to be approved, you know, allows for pre-existing conditions to not be covered in states if they so decide. So it's kind of a little bit of a play on words, which is a scary thought to me because it's hard to be a part of society. You know, I mean, I've been fortunate, Larry, and maybe for you and your family too. I've always had the access to the treatment that I needed in order to be well. But kind of hard for me living with a mental health issue if I didn't have access to treatment. How was I supposed to get well? And we know that mental health and physical health, there's a huge kind of parallel highway.
Exactly.
I call it the parallel highway. You can't take care of one and not the other, but you can't take care of any if you have no access to care.
And, you know, the thing is, too, that they want people with mental health issues to become back part of society and then they do everything they can to stop that. And I don't understand why.
Yeah.
You know, if you want them to become back and be part of society, then why are you putting all these barriers up so that they can't?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Particularly
because there's really some amazing treatments available now. You know, mental health, when I started working 25 years ago and was first diagnosed, we didn't have near what we have available for people for treatment today. Medications, even treatment-resistant, you know, treatments. To me, it's kind of like, I want to say sin or a crime for people to not have access to that, you know. It's almost kind of like saying, you know, we want you to produce and be a productive part of our society, but we're not going to give you the tools in order to be able to do that.
What drives me off the wall is that the government puts these, like the Affordable Care Act, But then various states are allowed to have it their own way, instead of having one normal or every for everybody.
Oh, Larry, don't get me started. The system is pretty messed up.
It is. It's
not even insurance, but just in general. Health care.
I'm not picking on insurance.
No. I'm saying don't get me started because
It drives me insane.
Oh, me too.
Because they'll have an act and they'll say, okay, we passed this. And then they say, okay, Nevada, or just using Nevada as an example. Oh, Nevada says, well, we don't want this, this, or this, and we'll put this, this, and this in its place. And, you know, California will do this, this, and this. And New York will say, yep, New Jersey will do something else. And it's just like, really?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this was passed, and, you know, now you're changing it. You know, so it's like, I don't know, it drives me nuts.
Yeah. Well, and even people that work in the healthcare system kind of, you know, can drive them nuts. I mean.
Oh, yeah, I understand that.
So, you know, I mean, I will go on record saying whatever they're considering, I hope it fails just as miserably today as, you know, the other stuff, because it doesn't give people what they need in order to kind of just be well.
Right. Yep, it's a shame, but that's the way it is, you know.
Well, I think it also speaks to the power of the voice, though, you know, because there were several legislators, you know, who've been contacted by their constituents and said, listen, it ain't great, but don't just repeal it. You know, you better repeal it and replace it with something that's going to serve us.
Right.
That reminds me, I did a Facebook post yesterday. Here's what I saw, and this is important because what I saw was that whatever is outlined in this new bill would not apply to legislators and their insurance.
Hmm.
So if they lived in a state that decided that they were going to do XYZ, not pay pre-existing conditions, it wouldn't apply if you were a legislator or in the legislator's office. And I remember I put a post and said, you know, if it's not good enough for them, then it really shouldn't be good enough for us either.
Exactly. But that's with anything.
Anything. I agree.
You know?
I agree with you.
I mean, you can work 2 years as a assemblyman or a congressman, serve one term, and get benefits for life.
Yeah.
Now you tell me a job where you work 2 years and get benefits for life. You know, I'm sorry.
I like it. I'll apply.
When are you running, Carol?
No.
But you know, it's like they have a separate. What do you want to call it?
Standard
for them than they do for the rest of the people, and that's just what drives me nuts. But anyway. I don't want to get too deep.
Yeah, we can't go down that road.
Let's go. Right.
Don't go down too far that road. Right.
Okay. You're also known as a wellness ambassador.
Yes.
Okay, ambassador.
All right.
Yeah. So what's the keys to wellness for someone with a mental health issue?
Well, listen, they're the same keys I live. I think goes first, let me share with you my definition of wellness. And I have shared this before, and I think you liked it. That wellness is an active process of becoming aware of and making choices towards a more successful existence.
Right.
You know, and why that's so important is it means people like myself living with an illness, we can also have wellness at the same time. And that successful existence is very individualized. So it's going to be different for different people. You know, for one person living with a severe mental illness, it might be living in a group home or some type of supervised where somebody else, it could be having their own apartment and working. And so it's very very individual driven. But I have found that when it comes to mental health, serious enough to require medication, such as it does for myself, it's kind of like there are four corners that you have to have in place, like four corners of a building or four legs of a chair. One is medication that helps you. And sometimes that's a rocky road getting there with mental health, finding that one medication that's going to be the right kind of connection for you, which makes the other three legs almost equally as important then. And that is treatment, outpatient treatment someplace, having sobriety. And what I mean by that is you kind of stop any harmful behaviors. Like we were talking about smoking earlier. Right. Well, if I have asthma and I'm still smoking, guess what? That's still harmful behavior. And so that's not going to help you be well. All right, so you're missing a corner already. And then the last thing is structure. What do you do with your time? Now, you don't have to leave the house, but you kind of have to have a way of, think of it as kind of like lines in the road that keep us from going all over the place. In wellness and recovery, we need the same thing.
I think also that people need a reason to get up in the morning.
Yes, yeah. Well, and that fits right into the purpose, though. I mean, those are the four, I mean, those are those four kind of, if you look at any treatment, and this goes back 25 years ago, I looked at what did we do in the hospital that helped people get well, and then what did they tell me they stopped doing at home in order to come back? And then, lo and behold, my own life, what did I end up stopping? And to me, that purpose is built into that structure. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in volunteering. You know, and if you can't leave your house, there's still ways to volunteer and create structure. Yep. I had a patient once recorded books this is back in the day, but when they did it for the place here, the books for the blind.
Right.
And so she would do audio recordings. They actually, you know, set her up with a little tape recorder. And
right.
I guess now you do it, just all be digital. But she didn't leave her house, but right. She was able to create structure, but even more important, a sense of purpose.
And she was helping somebody.
Yeah, that's the purpose, to be of help to somebody.
Sure.
I've even had people who, interestingly enough, their knitting for them was their purpose, because what they would do is they would knit socks or knit hats for the babies, but again, it was of giving, being able to give and serve somebody else other than themselves that created that.
That's true. And, you know, and I think that, you know, not everybody can go get a job.
Nope.
You know, it took my son a long time. Last 2 years he's been gainfully employed, and they like him and he likes them, and, you know, everybody's happy. But, you know, he works 2-3 days a week. And that's enough. He volunteers.
Yep.
He volunteers one day a week at the hospital.
He has structure. I mean, he's created structure in his life.
Absolutely.
Oh.
And has his own apartment.
Yeah.
Has had that for about 6 years now. And
So let me ask you a question, Larry.
Okay.
So going back maybe about 10, 15 years, was there ever a time when you actually imagined what you just told me?
No.
Yeah.
No.
And I guess
I can't tell you how far he has come
in
that period of time.
And I guess I ask you that question because I think people need to have hope, you know, that is in letting your, you know, your son and experiences like that. I mean, I know because I've worked with patients like that all the time. But even then, if somebody can't see it happening, it's still possible.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's amazing because the people in the hospital, most of the people in the hospital know him because he volunteers there and he has to deliver stuff around them. And, you know, and he was in day program there and stuff. And, you know, and they consider him a success story.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They all consider him a success story. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just very pleased and happy, and because it's been a long haul over 20 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You just mean when you said those 20 years made me think about the statistics and it kind of, I don't know where it came from, but often over the time I've heard that it takes a person at least 10 years to get an appropriate diagnosis, you know, of whatever their mental health or whatever's going on with them. And that 10 years can sometimes be a really long 10 years.
Yeah, well, he had a pretty, I would say, pretty definitive diagnosis. In less than 10 years, but finding the right medication.
Yeah.
That was the problem because he's been epileptic since he's 5.
Wow.
So the epileptic medication with the psychotic medication with intertwine and twist and turn. And
Which really kind of goes back to the whole idea of treating a whole person, because you can't separate out their physical from their mental health because they're intertwined.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know.
Yeah.
It's. like you said, you would never thought 10, 15 years ago he'd be where he is today. And, you know, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So there is hope. Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And I think there, like I said, there's more and more medications and more treatments available, you know, that I
think
nowadays that we didn't have in, you know, 10 years ago.
And, you know, a lot of times it takes the longest time to find the right medication.
Yeah.
Because everybody's body is different and reacts to things differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, I may be able to take aspirin and you can't. Or
right.
Whatever. You know,
absolutely.
And so it's the same thing with the medications.
Yeah.
And they seem to have, oh, if a person is depressed, they issue this. If a person has bipolar, oh, they give them that. And over the years, they've proven to work, but they don't always work for everybody.
Nope.
And that's the problem. You know? But they start them on those. And then they're either having a reaction by their hand slapping on the thing or their foot pounding, or they gain 40 pounds, Now you take a 21 or 22-year-old girl and, you know.
Not good.
Give her a Medicaid, she gains 40 pounds. Yeah. You know, you think she's going to continue to take it?
Nope.
Hell no.
I wouldn't continue to take it,
you know.
I say the same thing, you know, and that's where it's just, I think, offering people the encouragement that okay, we're gonna find something, you know.
Right.
But it means, you know, having the other things in place, even that much more important,
right.
You know, so you can at least kind of balance it out until you get something, kind of there. So those are the four. I call those the four foundation corners, you know, because for me, even the structure. And you know what? I don't know if you've experienced this, but I work with a lot of people over the years who. They could manage the depression or the anxiety with their job, and they were kind of not in treatment, but then as soon as they lost their job, it just took over. And that structure was such a critical role, but once it was gone, you know.
And I know I know people that can handle it at their job, but then when they come home, they lose it.
Yeah.
It's totally different at home, you know. And it's a shame, you know, because they have a family, they have a wife, they have kids, and you know, so on and so forth. And,
I'm a big believer, and I kind of have a Michelangelo approach to wellness. And then I think that we all have it inside of us, but we have to have the right tools. Just kind of like he had to have the tools to release David from the block of marble, because that's what he says. He didn't make David. He just released David from the marble, right? I think it's, for me, my life passion and mission is making sure people have the tools to be able to unleash their wellness, you know, kind of let that out. Because if you don't have the tools, and that comes back to the whole healthcare thing, if you don't have access to care, then it's hard to live well.
And I also think a lot of times, you know, people, if they have family or support from their relatives, that also helps.
It makes a big difference.
And, you know, because I know a lot of people that have no family.
Yeah.
You know, so they use support groups.
I was going to say the support groups become their secondary family.
Secondary family.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Or they go to the Getting Together Center.
Right. Or even I know where I worked for 12 years. We were people's family.
Right.
You know, that treatment program was a sort of a family for people.
Sure.
So it could even be a treatment setting.
Right, but they have to have something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Some sort of help.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be just I'll do it myself, you know, because I'm tough. You know,
yeah.
This doesn't work. Yeah.
I learned that when I first started working in mental health 25 years ago, the doctor was telling a story about powerlessness. And how you can't get well on your own, you know, from it. And he said it'd be like you standing on the train track, you know, in the speed line, because we were in, you know, Burlington County, coming down to going to Philadelphia, and you standing in the middle of the track trying to stop it by yourself. Ain't going to happen.
Nice.
You know, you just got to have help in order to say, Carol, get out of the way.
You know, there's another segment of the people with mental health issues that we haven't really talked about, and those are the people who don't even realize that they have it or deny it. The anosognosia, people just don't believe they're mentally ill. I mean, it's great to have the four legs of the chair, but these people are haven't even gotten to that point because they don't even won't admit they have a problem.
Well, don't want to admit they don't have a problem, but just
don't
have a
realize.
Clue. Yeah, yeah.
And that's part of the illness itself.
Can be part of the illness, absolutely. And then even with other health issues, it you know, it's not just mental health, but you're right. That's kind of the piece of it. And that is, how do you help those that don't want it? You know, because you can
exactly.
See they want it. And I tell you the...
Well, you can see they need it.
You can see they need it. Yep. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. You can see they need it, but they don't want it, and they don't think they can. And I think the task there, that was really the last book I wrote, was, you know, Help Called Help, How to Help Those That Don't Want It.
Oh, really? That was the title of the book?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now that one I have a copy of in my bag, Tracy. I'll guess what? When we're done here, I'll go get it for you, all right? But what I kind of said is that it's like a river, and the river change. But the problem is you can talk to somebody about going to the river, but if there's a mountain range and they can't see the river, don't talk to them about the river. So you
talk
can't
about
talk
the mountain
to somebody.
Range.
You got to talk about what is where they are, you know, and trying to help them create a picture. You know, you can't tell somebody they need help. They have to we have to guide them. So the first half is what changes. The second half is how to be a river guide. Because that's kind of what we ultimately have to do. We want to guide people to see that, oh, maybe I do need some help. And how, so it's kind of like it feels like there's nothing you can do, but that's really what we got to do. And the insight goes, that's what makes mental illness so much harder than physical illness. If I have a blood pressure, guess what? It's not telling me, oh, Carol, you don't have a blood pressure problem. I mean, some of the symptoms really do kind of get in the way of that.
Do you think that they need to crash and burn sometimes before they'll get that insight?
I think that sometimes it's that there's no one way. I always say this, there's no one road to acceptance. And actually, the road to acceptance isn't the same thing to everybody either. I think sometimes, yeah, I've had people that I've worked with who ended up saying to me, oh, Carol, somebody's been trying to get me help for so long, you know, and it took getting in the hospital and getting on these medications in order before that happened, That's
getting to stay on the medications, yeah.
Well, and that's where I kind of used the chair. I used to stand up on a chair because if you don't have the corner, if you have a three-cornered building, is it going to last? Is it going to stand up for very long? No. And so that's where my kind of pictures were always really good at helping people see that if you don't have some kind of medication, it's going to make it really difficult because the building's going to tip over. But it can't be the only thing either, because there are a lot of people who say, oh, I just want to take a pill and don't want to do any of the work either. Well, no, you got to get to the gym. You got to do some exercise. Like, we can't just rely, because that would be like one corner of a building isn't going to keep a building up.
Right.
So, and that's where I think pictures become very important, because it's a little harder for somebody to rationalize like a picture than it is, oh, that's just your thought, you know.
So that's one of the reasons you're using, use pictures?
Yeah.
And just,
I use
I've
a
seen
lot
the big
of,
words.
Yep,
and, yeah.
Images and just it's the right side of the brain,
yes.
You know, which
right.
Processes different information. It's the visual side. The left is the logical and the knowledge side, and the right is supposed to be kind of that creative side. But from what I had read, guess what side puts all the information together? The right. That the right side of our brain synthesizes, like the operating system on a computer. And so for me, that's what I found, started working 25 years ago. I could talk to people about stress, right? A little bit different, though, when I get you to think of a soda bottle and shake it up.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that it's not going to do anything to it. And like laundry, I also like using laundry as a stress example, because we can hide the laundry in the clothes hamper, you can put it away, but eventually it's going to pile up. And if you're looking at a pile as tall as you are, you're going to feel overwhelmed and hopeless. And how do you keep it from getting so tall?
That's true.
do a load of laundry.
Yeah. You know, a lot of us, either with mental health issues or without them, we have problems talking, communicating with people.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, it's a lot more difficult to communicate with your loved one if they have a mental health issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what have you found that works?
Well, I think I found working is not telling anybody anything, you know, but approaching it from my favorite words to say to everybody is help me understand. You know, because you could be sitting here in this chair and you're looking at, let's say, mental illness from one side, and I'm looking at it from the other side. And I kind of got to start and try and be where you are if I want to get you to where I am, you know. And I think that kind of saying, help me understand how you see it, you know. There's not a problem. Okay. You know, well, how are we going to know if it is a problem then? And I'd be really the other thing, Larry, the most important part about communication, and I find that even dealing with somebody with a mental health condition is even more important, is that it has to be very assertive. You know, if somebody feels like you're pushing them, you know, so I'll give you a picture. I like to think of communication as setting something on the table and then letting that person decide whether or not they'll pick it up. Because if you shove something at somebody, guess what they're likely to do? Shove it right back at you. You know, and I'll tell you the two words. I say the three most harmful words a person could ever hear dealing with mental health, or the harmful to the outcome, is you need to. When I hear nurses say, you need to take this medication, you know, or even, you know, somebody, you need to stop drinking, you need to do this. And I honestly believe people have built in little you meters in their brain that says, I don't need to do jack crap, you know, or who the H are you to tell me what to do? And that to me is so important, because you begin to have a conversation. You can't have a conversation with somebody that shut their ears off because they felt like you were, even though you weren't, they feel like you're attacking them. And that's where, if I can say, you know what, Tracy, help me understand, you know, what you see, and then try and kind of navigate together. And I've also thought of communication as a spotlight, you know, that it's on me kind of sort of thing. So it's an eye focus, but the minute that I make it about you, think about me blaring a spotlight right in your eyes. You're going to go, I don't want to hear it. So communication is really tricky. And then there is the leap. Dr. Amador, right. You know, and his
Savior.
LEAP program.
Savior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He kind of talks about communicating, particularly with individuals in mental health. They do LEAP around, I don't know, do they do LEAP around here in Hunterdon County at all? Because I know.
No.
Oh.
Because I mean, there's no program.
Yeah. Well, IFSS. So I know over in Mercer County, okay, some of the IFSS workers over there have even done workshops for us on LEAP. Mm-hmm. And so it's incorporated into part of the intensive family support services. That's another great way of, I forget what it stands for. Listen,
empathize, acknowledge?
I think acknowledge and partner.
Partner.
I think P is the partner. And again, it kind of speaks to this, how can we kind of join?
The L and the P at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good thing Tracy knew the other two.
Yeah. All right. Would you like to give your phone number again or your website?
Yeah.
I can't believe we've come to the end of the hour already.
Yeah.
And
some of the things you've said,
by.
Carol, are just so profound and so helpful. I really want to thank you.
Flies by. All right. So my way to get in touch with me, easiest way, is 888 and then the word life. And tools, which is breaks down to 543-3866. And then really the best website, the easiest, is to go to thewellyoushow.com. It's a new website. I put all my episodes of my TV show up there, 30-minute wellness show. So people can go to that one place. And then, you know, it has how you can get in touch with me, my phone number, my email, everything there. So that's thewellyoushow.com. And that's probably the easiest way to track me down.
All right. I can track you down, though.
Yeah, Larry knows where to track me down. So
I got all that info.
But yeah.
Carol, thank you again for coming on. I appreciate it. And
I always love coming, Larry.
Yeah, we
talk with
you
all.
So you know you're going to come back.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, anytime.
And we'll be back again next week, same time, same station. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce.